We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your host, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show, episode 215. To those joining us on Facebook Live, welcome to some Sunday night baseball chat. Scott, I got a little pep in my step because St. Paddy's Day is behind us. That means baseball's right around the corner, and we get the March 29th is the opening day, is March 30th, so we get like that couple days even sooner this season when opening day baseball happens.
Yeah, it's definitely sooner. I have a question to ask because I'm wondering, I know you're approaching 30. Did you realize it was St. Paddy's Day?
I did because I was up in Vermont. I was skiing.
So you went,
saw a bunch of morons in Irish hats and beads skiing down the mountain, just face planting.
So I woke up and
I knew about it. Yeah.
I went through the day as you know, I normally would. And probably like 11 or 12 o'clock, I realized it was St. Patrick's Day. Yeah. I was like, damn, things have changed. Things have changed. I used to like prepare for St. I used to go to like Savannah for St. Patrick's Day. Not anymore. Like I was mad that I didn't realize it because I always make the corned beef, the cabbage, and the potatoes and do the whole deal for St. Patty's Day. Every year I do it. It's my favorite meal of the year. Yeah. And I totally forgot. So I got to do it again. I got to do it this week at some point.
You've got a pass. You've got bigger priorities going on in your life. Yeah, you have a kid, I can imagine once you have a kid, everything else in your life gets put on second gear and the rest of it is just focus on Kemp. And that's understandable. I think the people understand.
Well, whether you want to or not, it's just your brain starts completely going away. I said this on Twitter the other day. I slept through the night the first and second time on Saturday morning and Sunday morning. First time he slept through the entire night. So
that's great.
I actually have way more sleep right now than I've had in a long time.
Well, yeah, you said I'm approaching 30. It's coming up in June. But the last couple of years I've noticed, I don't know if you've noticed this too, I just can't remember things as well. Like, I could still recall things from the 1999 baseball season like they happened yesterday. But you ask me about something that happened like 3 weeks ago, I don't know what the hell's going on. It's just new. My brain has reached capacity. And stuff's coming in. Something has to leave.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. I've really stopped watching a lot of other sports as much. Like, I don't follow a lot of the sports that I used to because I have to concentrate on what's going on with the Yankees for me to keep up and stuff. Nick Zucconi is hanging out in Facebook Live. He is part of the reason why I don't remember many things from 1998 to 2003.
Nick, hit me up. Tell me some stories. Maybe I can read them on the podcast.
Oh, Jesus.
Coming up later in the show, we have a treat for everybody. Scott, why don't you tell everyone who you spoke to this week?
Yeah, on Friday, I was able to get a hold of, and we had this was one of my favorite interviews, conversations, whatever. Richard Skank, who is Aaron Judge's hitting coach, talked to him on Friday for about 25 minutes or so. We were supposed to go like 10 to 15, and we just kept talking. And there were so many interesting things that were being said, and like the way that he was going, the approach, and like all sorts of different like beautiful nuggets that I know everybody's going to really enjoy. So definitely check that out. It's at the end of this episode, probably about halfway through. But great conversation, and it's fascinating. To me, it's fascinating on the changes that were made, how he did them, and how quickly he was able to show the good Aaron Judge, because after 2016, there were like ridiculous holes. Everybody was, nobody was praising Aaron Judge at that point. The guy was striking out at 50%. He goes and works with this guy in January of 17. And then we have a triple crown contender by All-Star break. It's crazy.
I mean, this guy, Richard Skank, is a miracle worker. He needs to be going. He needs to be having everybody in Major League Baseball contacting him and be like, you're in a slump. Come to the hitting doctor because I will fix you.
So Aaron Judge was his first professional client at that point. And now he's
worked
got like,
out well.
Now he's got like 50. He also started with the guy who was leading at the All-Star break. So Aaron Judge was where he was at the All-Star break. And then his other client at the time when he was working with him was a minor league guy. I forget his name, but was leading the minor leagues in home runs at that point. And like this guy turns people into that don't hit home runs into home run power. It's crazy.
Okay. Well, Judge always had power, so I'm not worried
there's
about
nothing,
anything.
There's no kind of shady going on.
There's no chemistry going on.
Well, when you
say he turns a non-home run hitter into a home run hitter, right. You know what kind of conversation that
totally,
leads to.
Totally different innuendo if we're talking about 1998.
Yeah. So stay tuned for that. I'm looking forward to listening to it myself. Also, next week, we are going to be in Tampa, Friday the 23rd, Saturday, March 24th. We're going to be at both of those 1 p.m. games. Friday, we've got a smaller crew going to be sitting out in right field. I know Joe's McFly is going to be with us, maybe 8 or 9 people. If you're at that game, definitely hit us up. Come by, say hi, have a beer. And then on Saturday, it's one of the last home spring training games. So we're going to see a ton of regulars in there. We might even see what the opening day lineup is going to be. I believe Saturday, let me count it, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, we might see Severino start on that Saturday because that would line him up for opening day.
I heard Boone talking today, and I think that that's exactly what's happening. I think he's going to be pitching on the 7th as well.
Sevy was announced as the opening day starter. No real surprises there. He earned it. But we're probably going to see him on that Saturday. We got a big crew, almost 30 people going to be with us.
32
people. That is almost 30 still.
Yeah, that is almost 30. It's beyond it. But then Friday, if you are at the game, definitely come say what's up. I was looking at the tickets to see where we are. So we're in right field. They have like half moon tables. We have two of those tables, tables 2 and 3. So come by and say hey if you're at the game.
I'm looking forward to it. We've been down. This is going to be our third year in a row. It's always a ton of fun. Spring training baseball. Spring baseball just gets nothing better to get you in the mood for regular season. Because then you fly back north and it's going to be probably 40 degrees and snowing.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it because this has been a long off season. And I feel like we've been speculating for like 6 months.
Oh, you're tired
months.
Of speculating? Are you?
I'm pretty sick of it. I need some real things to happen.
As a Yankees off season, two major things happened. They got a new manager, Aaron Boone. They got the National League reigning MVP, Giancarlo Stanton. Yet we still spent a solid 10 episodes just speculating about the same shit. And it's fine. And we appreciate all of the mailbags that poured in over the offseason. Like people had questions, but eventually Scott and I are just talking to one another. Like we can only continue to speculate so much. Before we talk in circles and probably contradict something we said a month earlier just because we've confused ourselves with all the speculation. So nobody is happier than the two of us that actual baseball, not just grown men throwing baseballs and hitting baseballs.
This counts. The stuff that counts.
Meaningful baseball, it'll impact the standings. I am so excited about
it. I need
it.
Like, I need it. That's where I am right now. I'm excited.
Has it given you any appreciation for what some sports radio guys have to deal with?
No, because they do it for a living. Like if this was my like full-time job and I did it, I would have.
But they pull shit out of thin air.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what you have to do. Not, you know, you just come up with hypotheticals. So I don't need to harp on it anymore. Let's talk about April 7th. April 7th is basically 2 weeks away. Do I have my math right?
3 weeks.
3 weeks away.
So April 7th is 3 weeks away. We're not going to talk about all the events. Focus on April 7th. We have a good group going. If you haven't gotten tickets, make sure you get them this week, like early this week. I got to find out exactly when my cutoff is for the t-shirts for that game because we're shipping them out this time. So there will be, it'll probably be towards the end of the week. So I have to confirm that with my print shop. But definitely get your group together. It's going to be a lot of fun. First weekend game. I think it does line up for Severino pitching on that day, if my math is correct, but it's close. If not, it's either him or Tanaka, I'm pretty sure. It's going to be a lot of fun, obviously. First weekend series in the stadium with this ridiculous team. How could you not be jonesed up for that? We have a great deal. It's $64. You get a pregame at the dugout. We have ridiculous beer specials. You get a t-shirt and you sit with the entire group in sections 205
and
206. And we get loud and we have fun and it's a blast. So
the beer specials that you mentioned are $10 pitchers.
$10
of
pitchers.
Beer.
Probably so, like PBR or Bud Light or something like
that's
that.
That's okay. It doesn't matter when it's a pitcher. You're just looking for volume, not quantity. You're looking for quantity, not quality. And then it's $4 tall boys domestic. Is it still TBD? Is it PBR, Bud Light, something like that?
It depended on their vendor. Yeah. So he'll let us know soon.
It's a hell of a lot cheaper than drinking in the stadium. That is the point of the whole thing.
It's actually cheaper than going on StubHub or one of the other places and getting tickets. It's a lot cheaper. So and better seats. SeatGeek.
So last episode we recorded, and then the next morning the Yankees signed Neil Walker. Yep. You briefly mentioned the news as the lead into the episode, but it actually worked out well where we had a week to digest. There's some other moves that have happened, but let's just sort of reset, go over the news. Neil Walker signs $4 million base salary. He can make up to $500,000 in bonuses, which are based on plate appearances. I know there's a number of different ones that he can reach. So the more he plays, the more he makes, basically. I was very surprised when I saw this news come down. I thought the Yankees were done, especially done with the infield. We spent an entire episode a couple weeks ago trying to figure out the infield equation.
Without Neil Walker.
Yeah, I felt like Rain Man trying to figure this shit out. It's like, okay, we've got Brandon Drury, who we just traded for. Obviously, we've got Didi at shortstop. Then we got Tyler Wade, Gleyber Torres, Miguel Andujar, Tyler Austin. All these guys are competing for spots. And then, boom, you throw Neil Walker in the mix. How does he fit in? Well, obviously, they're paying him. He's going to play.
Yeah. A $5 million contract right around there. I was surprised that this happened. I wasn't expecting him to go down. But at the same time, none of us were expecting a guy like Neil Walker or some of these guys in this free agent class that would be available at this time for a one-year deal at such a bargain. I mean, that's what it is. It's a bargain price. And similar to what, and this is a horrible comparison because it didn't work at all, but it's a similar move.
Don't even say it. Don't even say his name. I'm in a good mood.
It's a similar move for what Cashman did to get the home run king from the National League over to the Yankees last year, because they saw an opportunity for a value move, and it gave them some depth, and that's what they did. Now, Neil Walker is actually a legitimate major league hitter and major league player. He plays with his eyes open. He can play multiple positions. He can hit from both sides of the plate. When you're looking at the move, while it was a surprise, it's a good surprise because, you know, this team is ready to win now. They're ready to win. So right. While Cashman and the rest of the brass are looking to the future to make sure that they're prepared for future seasons, they still have to make damn sure that they are ready and loaded up as much as they possibly can for 2018, because it would be a damn shame if they didn't, because this team is ready to go now. But it's a good move.
Yeah, no, that all makes sense. So if you told me on January 1st, the Yankees will sign Neil Walker this offseason, I would have said, yeah, that makes perfect sense. But what I was surprised about is how everything unfolded, and they traded for Brandon Drury.
Right.
They had Andujar and Wade playing extremely well in spring training. I did not then expect them to go and sign Neil Walker. That is what surprised me.
Yeah, well, I think what we're seeing is that there was a plan. In the sense that they were not going to trust all these young kids to come up and play. Right. I think that was the backroom plan that nobody knew about.
And that's what we talked about. That's what I think.
A lot of young guys, if you have those two guys. I mean, that's two more rookies starting in the infield.
This was the whole argument for signing Todd Frazier or even keeping Chase Headley, which I'm glad they didn't keep Chase Headley. And at this point, considering they got
Drury over Frazier.
Drury over Frazier and Walker in the mix. Like, I'm much happier with the situation they have now. But the whole argument for keeping a veteran infielder is so you don't get exposed with two rookies in the infield.
Right. And, you know, after what did happen last year at first base because of the Bird injury and the incompetence of one Chris Carter at first base, they were left with a massive hole on the right side of the field, defensively and offensively. And you know, Brian Cashman wasn't going to be put in that situation again, especially with a brand new manager. Like, he's going to give him every single possible thing to succeed, because we all know Aaron Boone and Brian Cashman are extremely tied at the hip. Their success and failure are tied at the hip 100%. A lot of it's on Cashman, because Cashman made the decision to get rid of Girardi, or not renew Girardi, whatever you want to call it, and bring Boone on. So as much as there's pressure for him to win, he's got to make sure that he's got the guys to win. And if you could get a Neil Walker, a veteran guy, knows how to hit, can play multiple positions, you know, probably a good clubhouse guy from what I've heard, with a young team, you do that move. It's just more depth. Worst case scenario, you got guys that were potentially ready to go that are still rookies that can just get seasoned in AAA. They're not off the team. They're still there ready to go. It's depth. It's a good move.
Yeah. As far as how it affects Gleyber Torres, I don't think it really affects him that much because he wasn't having a good spring. He was going to start in the minors regardless so they could extend his service time. Now he's going to get half a season in AAA, and that's what we were looking at regardless after the way he was playing this spring. So that's fine. Andujar, I think, is more interesting because I think Andujar played well enough to have an argument where you could say he should have made the opening day roster.
Yeah, but it's all about position too. Like he kind of, this is something that we've discussed in the past about Andujar being a one trick guy because he plays third base. Now I know they were talking about putting him at first, or they did put him at first for a game or a couple of innings or something at some point. I think in the minor league game, or there were, maybe it was just talk, but he's a third baseman. Drury can go in and, I mean, he's going to be the starting third baseman now, but he can play second base. He can play other positions.
Right.
It just gives them more flexibility. I mean, this has been the theme of the offseason is flexibility. Brian Cashman likes his flexibility, and because of that, he's giving that flexibility to Aaron Boone.
So this allows them to go into the season with Drury at third base, Neil Walker at second base, with the options later in the season if Andujar and Glaber are tearing it up in the minor leagues and and Drury and or Neil Walker just are not producing. Like if Neil Walker is having a slow season,
you don't have to keep him
in the lineup.
Right.
It's $4 million that you might have to flush down the toilet, but it at least gives you something in the beginning of the season to go in with. This is a major league second baseman.
But there's really nothing going to say that this guy is not going to hit. I mean, he's hit it over his entire career. Like that's, so this is something that,
You could have said he's always hit home runs. So you give him the playing time, he's going to hit home runs. Guess what? He had the playing time last year and he didn't hit home runs. All he did was strike out with his eyes closed.
Chris Carter is not a comparable. To anybody ever.
He's
the worst. I'm just saying the situation was the same, similar. Yeah. But, you know, it's a guy that has a much lower percentage of bottoming out and having to. But it doesn't matter because if he does, we got guys ready. They're ready to go. Gleyber Torres did not have a good spring, did not look ready to take that job. I mean, he had to earn that job still. So he needed that time.
Do you think he kind of went into the spring thinking like he had, like it was his to lose?
No, I don't think so.
And really he needed to treat it like he needed to win it?
No, I mean, everybody, if you even go back to our interview with, what was his name? Scott. He was the play-by-play guy for the AA team that Gleyber Torres played on.
For the Cubs. Yeah.
And he was talking about how, like, such a good kid and hard worker Gleyber Torres. And that's what everybody has said. Like, this guy is beyond his years as far as maturity. So, no, I don't think that's.
And we've heard that about Andujar, too.
Andujar's been great. I mean, he got minor league player of the year on the day that he sent down, and just, you know, he's respectful. He's appreciative for the opportunity in the pros. So look, they're both, I think they've proved that they're both handling it extremely well and doing the right thing. So I don't think there's any of that concern.
Here's the interesting guy, Tyler Wade, because Cashman and Aaron Boone have glowingly talked about Tyler Wade. They love his talent. He's had a really good spring. I think he's going to make the team. There's an opening for him right now because it looks like Ellsbury's going to start the season on the DL. Glassbones Jacoby Ellsbury with his hurt oblique is going to start the season on the DL, which is great news if you're a Yankees fan because it allows you to have a guy like Tyler Wade and see what he can do. But it's interesting because it's not going to last. You can't have all of these infielders on the team for the entire season. There's too many bodies, not enough spots to play them.
Yeah, it's, you know, a week ago, was it a week ago that I was talking about Tyler Wade? I'm like, I don't see a long-term future on this team for him. Like, I just don't see it. I don't see where he fits in long-term. And I kind of still don't, unless he is playing in that utility role. But
what if he hits in that utility role? Then I think he takes Torres's job. I know you kind of sarcastically said I'm a Torres hater. Not a Torres hater. I love little Toto. But if both are playing well in the utility role, the decision is so friggin' easy to take Tyler Wade over Ronald Torres.
Yes, if they're both playing well, Tyler Wade right now could very well be the second baseman. You're looking around the league, looking around what they're saying, like you told them, they're glowing about Tyler Wade. Everything he's done, he's played out of his freaking mind. Like on Saturday, he made two spectacular plays at second base, like like very, very top-notch pro plays at second base. The guy hustles his ass off. You could tell that he worked his butt off in the offseason. He's significantly
He's super athletic too. Yeah. He can play the outfield if they absolutely need him to. He played center field in the Arizona Fall League. He is a shortstop. If you're a shortstop, you can play second base. So
right. He's athletic. Kids, they were talking about John and Susan were talking about Tyler Wade being potentially like the best glove in the Yankees system. And that's probably not far off, honestly. He's a very good glove. So, and he's been hitting. Like, that was his problem last year. He didn't hit. He didn't hit worth a damn last year. And maybe it's because it was a new spot. Maybe it's because the lights were bright and he just didn't handle it well. Who knows?
he comes up and he gets four at-bats a week against Major League pitching. That shit is tough.
That's a big deal. And it looks like he took that and realized that was an opportunity that he missed. Yeah. And he's not going to screw up the next opportunity. And that's what I'm seeing right now. I'm seeing a guy who is motivated, driven, and playing his ass off. So I would not be surprised by any means if he were to be the starting second baseman. I still think Neil Walker's going to be opening day for second base, but it wouldn't surprise me if Tyler Wade was that guy.
So then, how does this affect? I guess we know the near term. How does it affect like the midterm? Like, what are we looking like in June? Where is Tyler Wade in June? Where is Tyler Austin in June? Where is Andujar and Gleyber Torres in June?
Yeah,
because these are all questions that are a little bit more fuzzy.
Oh, they definitely are, because there are so many bodies now. And I think some of it has to do with whether or not Jacoby Ellsbury comes back as a healthy human being and plays baseball ever again. Because I'm not ruling out that he just, you know, we just don't see him again.
I'm not saying somebody should do something bad to Ellsbury, but I'm not saying it.
There's already something going on. Like, we could stretch an oblique injury out for a long time. Yeah. Those obliques, man, they linger. And they can linger.
Can someone
all
in the Yankees clubhouse like slip him a tapeworm, and then like, oh, why does Ellsbury have no energy? It's so weird. We can't figure it out. He's gotta sit weird. Out. Yeah, something's weird.
The Yankees just bought 10 Rebuild the Empire T-shirts from our fan shop. I was very excited about this. It's for the front office because they are literally rebuilding the empire, and I love it. I love that the shirts will be there. Cashman is getting the Cashman shirt. So what I'm saying is, hold on. We've infiltrated the dugout. The locker room. Maybe we could send something on the shirt.
I mean, can we find out what Ellsbury is allergic to and then spray it all over that t-shirt? Question for you. When is the Empire officially rebuilt? Is it when they finally hoist the World Series trophy? 100%. Or is it rebuilt now? They were in the ALCS last year.
No, it's not rebuilt. An empire is... When you have an empire, you're the top. There's nobody above you. You have to be a champion.
You're thinking like Star Wars terms, like entering.
I'm thinking 1996 on, there was the Evil Empire. That's when it came on because they just kept winning. And after they won, they would just bring in more guys and they would keep winning. And that's
Darth
what I'm
Vader.
For.
So is Brian Cashman Darth Vader in this situation?
No, he's the
Emperor.
He's the Emperor.
Who's Vader?
I don't know. Maybe he's Vader and the other ones are the Empire. I can't put one of the Steinbrenners as the Empire, though.
Aaron Boone is too nice to be Vader.
Yeah, he puts a mask on, he becomes Vader.
Does the Emperor Brian Cashman have another move up his sleeve? Does signing someone like Neil Walker allow him to maybe explore what Andujar can return to him on the trade market? Andujar had a fantastic spring. Maybe he gets someone to say, yeah, I'll give you a starting pitcher now for Andujar.
You know, I'm not putting anything past Cashman at this point. I mean, this guy has been unpredictable in a sense that it's really hard to just place what he's going to be doing. I mean, we thought that this team was ready to go, and then all of a sudden now Neil Walker's on the team. Like, he does things like this because he's doing – and I think a lot of this is attributed to the amount of conversations that he has. And that's – people get all up in arms about him having conversations about certain prospects and finding out what's going on and the pitching. Like, when we're talking about getting a pitcher, like, I don't understand the move about getting another pitcher, but I understand the fact that he's got to have these conversations. Because he's having these conversations, when he does need something or when something pops up, he's on the phone call list. And that's a good thing. So it would not surprise me if there was some other thing up his sleeve, but it's hard to see what it would be now because the roster looks completely good. I mean, we're pretty damn strong up and down.
Positional position players, definitely. We were talking about before we pressed record, like, what do they do with the bullpen now? If they do carry Wade, they've got Torres, and they got all these infielders, like, do they go into the season one bullpen guy short? Because you got a couple extra off days at the beginning of the season. You don't necessarily, or maybe Montgomery doesn't start on the, because he's the fifth starter. Maybe Montgomery starts off the roster and you have that extra bullpen guy until you actually need Montgomery to start a game. I don't know what they do. But one guy that's interesting is Chasen Shreve, because he's out of major league, he's out of minor league options.
Right.
So he either needs to be on the major league team or they're going to have to put him on waivers if someone picks him up.
Which they would.
You can organize a trade for him. Or if no one picks him up, which, like you said, someone will, then he gets sent to AAA. But you can't just send him to AAA. He's out of options.
So I think when we're looking at the final roster, unless, if they do something like that with Jordan Montgomery, then that's a different animal. But if we're talking about people who are on the roster and will be there 2 weeks into the season, the guy to me is, we're looking squarely at the two guys are Tyler Wade, who seems to be on the team from what everybody's saying and from all reports. I think the last guy on Tyler is Tyler Austin, because Neil Walker played, how many, we looked up how many games he played, 17 games last year in first base. Mm-hmm. First time he played first base in his career was last year, but he played it 17 games out of however many he played.
I wouldn't necessarily call him a backup first base option.
No, but he's, Romine can also play first base. You have a couple, Drury has played like, what, one game did we figure
one
out?
One game.
Like, there are guys who can put a glove on and go over there and play if need be. Yeah. My point is that he's not 100% necessary early in the season while they're figuring things out. So Chasen Shreve to me is on the team. Like, I don't think they're going to release him to put another position player on there with pretty much the guarantee that they're going to lose him. Like, I don't think they're ready to lose him yet.
Chasen Shreve, though, has not done anything to warrant you being like, I have to keep Chasen Shreve. Like, you lose Chasen
Shreve.
Yeah,
but you're giving
Shreve
him up for practically nothing at that point for the backup first baseman.
That happens sometimes. When your roster is stacked, you lose guys like Chasen Shreve. That just happens.
The thing is, though, with a guy like Tyler Austin, a backup first baseman, like, God forbid there was something that happened to first base and you needed to have someone play a significant amount of time. That's when you go and you bring somebody up and there's a roster spot already cleared. So it would be for a day off or something along those lines. And if you're doing that, like, Neil Walker could probably go over there and play first base for that. Austin Romine, on a day he's not catching, you know, he could go over there.
But
the
Romine thing is not a long-term solution, because you never want to have your backup catcher as a backup somewhere else.
Right. I totally agree with that. But I think Neil Walker kind of plays into that. I think Neil Walker might be a guy that they could move around.
Aren't you glad we spent a solid 10 minutes talking about Adam Lind and the Yankees released him on the 14th? You know what I am? I hope Adam Lind came in with that horse shit ugly goatee. The Yankees made him shave it, and then we're like, oh yeah, by the way, you're released now.
See, Adam Lind is a professional baseball player. He deserves to be on a roster somewhere. Like, the fact that that guy's not on a roster, even if it's for a small deal.
He's a Tampa Bay Devil Ray, is what he
belongs. But he's still a pro player. Like, he's a solid veteran guy that you could bring in to play first base and have a pretty good production from. Like, he doesn't deserve to be on the street.
So, with the Walker signing, how does the lineup look to you? Gardner, Judge, Bird, Stanton, Sanchez, we think is the top five.
Yeah. I like the I tweeted this today. So today's lineup was pretty close. They had both Aaron Judge and Stanton in the outfield. So I think one of those guys would be at DH, probably Stanton. I still think Stanton's going to be primarily the DH. We're going to see him there probably the most of anybody. And then you insert Aaron Hicks, but the first six guys today, I think, is the money order. I really
so
do.
Didi was six instead of Hicks,
Didi was
right?
six, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the nice thing about the Walker signing is that he's also a switch hitter. So now you have two switch hitters you can play around with in the lineup with Hicks and Walker.
Yeah.
And then that allows the lefty righty thing to play out a little bit nicer.
Absolutely. And so you're having options at the bottom. Like, to me, I think Aaron Hicks is almost like, to me, he's like the perfect guy to turn the lineup around. Throw him in that nine spot.
He gets on base a lot, but. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Walker and Drury seem like they're going to be at the bottom of the line.
I think Drury will be higher. I don't know. Yeah, I could see Walker or Aaron Hicks. I like having the switch hitter there, though.
D- Does it really matter, though? Like, when you're talking about this caliber of lineup, it doesn't really matter at that point where guys are hitting, because they've got so much depth in the lineup that it's 1-9. It's such a tough lineup. And I was thinking, I was like, looking at those nine names, I'm like, wow, I cannot believe the Yankees are going into a season with this sort of lineup. 5 years ago, on opening day, the lineup was Brett Gardner, Eduardo Nunez, Robinson Cano, Kevin Youkilis, Vernon Wells, Ben Francisco, Ichiro, Jason Nix, and Francisco Cervelli. That was an opening day lineup for the New York Yankees.
Yeah, it was like bizarro world at that point. With Kevin Youkilis on the Yankees was just, I couldn't handle that. That was not.
You thought he was ugly with a goatee. Imagine him just completely shaved.
He is a horrible, ugly son of a bitch. I think he went to Japan after that. He probably stayed there. It's probably a good place for him to be.
No, he's back.
Youkilis needs to just stay. Like, the fact that that guy was wearing pinstripes with that horrible, horrible batting stance, it drove me insane.
You know what's? Because I hated him. I'm embarrassed about. I loved that signing.
Oh. It's disgusting. Like, it makes me want to throw up thinking about it.
The Jason, Ben Francisco, Jason Nix.
There wasn't Jason Nix spelled with a Y.
J-A-Y-S-1. Yeah, it was complete bizarro world. So, and I kind of just went down this rabbit hole on Twitter thinking about, say, a hypothetical situation after the 2014 season, Robinson Cano re-signs in New York. I don't think the Yankees are where they are today, because Cano makes them a better team in 2014, 2015, 2016. He puts them in that 85, maybe making the playoffs window. The Yankees probably don't tear everything down in 2016 if they have Robinson Cano on the roster. So I honestly don't think.
So you love the Ellsbury signing.
No, I don't love the Ellsbury signing.
Well, that contributed to it.
But I think Cano not re-signing, I think, has led us here. I think if Cano re-signed, we're not here today.
It may have escalated it. Yeah, it may have pushed it up a year, at least a year. Because, you know, nobody really thought in the beginning of 2016, when they tore it down and started making all these trades, that it was going to happen. Like, nobody believed that they would actually do it. You and I hoped, like, I'm like, come on, this is the spot.
We were kind of saying it like, when we were running the podcast at that point, we were saying it like, they need to tear down and rebuild. This team is going nowhere.
Yeah.
We were saying it like, this is never going to happen. Like, it's never happened in my lifetime.
It was me talking, like, the way I would say it is like, this is the right thing to do. This is what they should do. But they're the New York Yankees. They're probably not going to do it. Who am I talking about? The New York Yankees. They don't rebuild. But they didn't, because Brian Cashman's a freaking genius. And not only did he throw guys away, send them away, but he got ridiculous hauls back and then bring some of the guys back. So, you know, the evil genius that is Brian Cashman, the wizard that is working behind the scenes, has made this happen. Maybe sending Cano out to Never Never Land in Seattle, where nobody even knows there's a baseball team, maybe that was just part of the journey.
Yeah, it was just interesting to think about, because I hated that, not signing Cano and then using the money to sign shittier Ellsbury players like Ellsbury. Yeah. But where I am, where the Yankees are today, I would not trade that for anything. Moving on, Judge got reprimanded. He got it's a slap on the wrist. It's almost like a detention slip. Like, don't do this again, big guy.
Yeah.
When he talked, or when he made comments that Machado would look good in pinstripes. And I think I even saw you tweet this, that the problem wasn't necessarily the comments. It was Judge talking to the media about the comments.
Right. Because those conversations happen all the time between
players. They happen in plain sight. Like, Bryce Harper and Giancarlo Stanton had this conversation about Stanton joining the Nats a couple years ago on Twitter.
Yeah.
Bryce Harper's posted an Instagram post with Chris Bryant saying hashtag back to back one day. So this stuff happens. It's just, when it happens and then baseball writers are talking about it and it's in front of media,
MLB has to stand up and say, hey,
MLB almost has to say, come on, Aaron, like, be smarter.
Yeah. Major League Baseball had to say something. They had to, because they probably got phone calls from the Orioles. You know, the Orioles are just waiting, like, come on, Yankees, screw up so we can get some kind of a lawsuit.
Buck Showalter.
Yeah, let's go. Come on, Yankees. We're waiting for you to mess up. We're like, ha, they're like the rat of the AL East.
Yeah, who's leading that charge?
They'll tell him.
Buck Showalter is definitely leading that charge. I still think he has a Steinbrenner voodoo doll.
But yeah, that's basically what it was. Aaron Judge got a slap on the wrist. I guarantee he was blushing. He was probably embarrassed. He probably got a phone call from his dad.
It's the first time he's gotten trouble.
He was very nervous. You know, I guarantee he had butterflies when that happened. So he doesn't like that stuff. Like, that's not him. And, you know, it was all in good fun. It was nothing freaking serious. It was stupid. So maybe that's his one thing. Now he's just going to be straight in there.
Well, it's the first time he's gotten a slap on the wrist.
Yeah.
It'll probably, if I had to bet, it'll be the last time because Judge is the most careful, respectful, careful. He's just very, he's very careful person.
Even on the R2C2 podcast when he was, when he was on that show, you could tell he was thinking so much about those. Even in like a very loose atmosphere with CC like throwing the F-bomb around and Ruko just, you know, it's a casual conversation. He was still very calculated and guarded with what he says. And honestly, I think that's just his upbringing. Like, I think that's how he was raised.
I agree. You know who was good on that was the Gardner.
Gardner's a funny dude.
He is. So now we know why Didi uses the clown emoji for Brett Gardner, because he's the one who plays pranks.
Yeah. I mean, we knew that he was a prank, I think, but when he's telling the stories and he's actually like, you hear him telling, talking more in detail about it, it's interesting because you definitely get to know Gardner on a different level because he's definitely more of a reserved guy that stays to himself.
Yeah. What did you think about Major League or the minor leagues instituting the dumb rule of trying to speed up the game by putting a runner on second base in extra innings?
It's a circus move. It's stupid. It's dumb. Call more strikes. We'll speed
this game up. When is MLB going to realize that extra inning games are not the problem? How often does extra inning games happen? Once a week, maybe? So you have a 15-inning game. That's kind of rare. It's rare and it's fun. It's almost a novelty. People get into it. The problem is 9-inning games are too long. 15-inning games are long because it's 15 fucking innings. Stop trying to make that shorter and make the 9-inning games shorter. Like
With things that actually don't affect the game.
Somebody needs to sit down in front of Major League Baseball and say, do you guys realize what you are doing? Like, it's not complicated. You're making things too complicated. How many dumb rules bullpen
Because they're
carts?
Getting too influenced by, like, the Snapchat of the world where everybody's attention span is nothing. And they're like, well, everybody's attention span is nothing, so we have to make sure that we put gimmicky bullshit in here, speed up the game in ways that are not natural to baseball, and they're overreacting to a problem that's not really that big of a problem. And if you really do want to make a change, I've said this for the past, 4 weeks,
have the
umpires call more strikes. Like, you don't have to say the zone's bigger. Have a freaking meeting. Tell them to call more strikes. And they'll call more strikes. And the game will progress. The bat will be off the shoulder more. The guys will be working a little bit quicker. Like, pitchers working quicker. If there's a deal, we would call more strikes if you guys pick it up a little bit. Let's just have an agreement. Let's just say that. You call more strikes, the games will be faster. Bottom
line. If we were running for co-MLB commissioner, our platform would be call more strikes and cut down 30 seconds off each commercial time by everyone just gets to put a logo on the jersey or the hat.
I wouldn't even do that. I would put in more smaller screen ads.
Picture in picture.
Not the whole thing. Just like, you know how they do in the NFL, they do like a little L. And you still have your full, it's a pretty good size picture, but you have an ad in there.
Didn't they do that in the playoffs this year?
Do that for, yeah, I think they did. Year? Do that for between the innings, come back a little early and do that.
It didn't cut down on the actual innings. It didn't cut down on the actual time in between innings.
But how much time, is there 30 seconds between the commercial break and then the first pitch, or the pitch of that inning or whatever? It's probably about 30 seconds. So have that in there and then fade it out after 30 seconds once you come back to break. And there you have a 30-second commercial while the action, maybe even the action is happening at the, you know, for the last 15 seconds. But things like that can happen digitally and don't affect the game while you're there. Because also, think about this. When people are there, it's affecting their experience at the game. And that's a problem. Like, I hate going to football games. Personally, I don't like being at football because they're boring. There's so much time, so much dead time at a football game. Unless it's a really, really good game and I'm totally into it. It's just not that great of a spectator sport anymore in person because there's so much dead time. They continue to do this with baseball. You're going to run into a similar issue. Totally different sport, but like, you got to think about the people at the stadium too.
But we even said this. Like, you and I watch baseball games. We're going to watch every baseball game, whether it's 2 hours and 45 minutes or 3 hours and 8 minutes. We're diehard fans. That's just the nature of it. Most of the people listening to that podcast fall into that category. The casual fan is not going to watch a baseball game because it's 10 minutes shorter.
Right.
Like it's not even gonna show up on their radar. Like, should baseball do things to try and get the game a little bit shorter? Yes, I think they should. Would I like? I would actually like games if they were a little bit shorter. Like, we watch every night. Like, there's certain nights where I just don't want to be up until 11 o'clock watching a game again. Like, if it ended at 10 o'clock, that would be beautiful. But if they're going for, like, these casual, quote-unquote, fans, shortening the game isn't going to do shit. It's not going to move the needle one bit.
No, but juicing the ball did. Like, that type of stuff works.
That extended the games. That made the games longer.
It did, but it also brought people in because there's more home runs happening. So, no, I know, what do you want, baseball? What do you want? You want more home runs? You want more offense? You want shorter games? And the
Yankees games are going to be hella long this year because you got a bunch of guys who are going to hit home runs and a bunch of guys who are going to strike out and a bunch of guys who are going to walk.
Look, last time I looked, the last year playoffs for the last 2 years, right, have been freaking on fire. Like, when the Cubs won, that did a lot for baseball by itself. The Cubs hadn't won in forever, and now you have the Cubs winning in the World Series, and a good World Series, a lot of offense. And then last year, with the freaking Dodgers and the Astros hitting 8,000 home runs, going, you know, with long-ass games, but they're because of the home runs. Do you think there was a problem with the ratings for that? No, there was a problem. People were complaining about that. They were like, there are home runs happening. It's like the PED era all over again. Like, chicks love the long ball. Like, this whole thing is crazy. The changes that they're making make absolutely no sense because you're right. The casual fan's not going to care if it's 10 or 15 minutes shorter. That's not going to make them watch the game.
Yeah, if their casual fan isn't watching the game right now, wasn't the most home runs in Major League Baseball hit last year? Like, total?
Yeah, I think so.
So it's lack of home runs, lack of offense is not a problem in Major League Baseball.
Right, right.
And I mean, baseball's doing well.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, it was exciting. Like, why are we changing things? Let's leave it.
People are watching baseball still. I mean, it's not football. It's never going to be football. Football is a once a week event. Like, yeah. You're never going to compete with NFL.
No, but
you're still going to get a ton of people.
It's a quantity thing. Like, there's a lot more games, so people will take some of them for granted. When there's 16 games on the schedule, people are going to watch every game because there's small amount that happens.
Yeah. Anyway.
Stop changing.
If you had to put money, does this rule ever make it to Major League Baseball?
No.
Well, then what are they bothering with it in the minors?
Because who cares about the minor leagues? I mean, the minor leagues are like gimmick central anyway, so who gives a shit?
All right.
Other news. Still stupid.
Let's quickly go some other news around spring training. The Yankees traded outfielder Jake Cave, who had been in Scranton, for a pitcher, 19 years old, from the Twins named Luis Gill. This... Cave was obviously on the trading block. I mean, he was just
he had been
a million guys
taken in the Rule 5 draft before and then got sent back by Cincinnati, I believe.
Yeah, he is Ben Gamel 2.0.
Yeah, he's a productive hitter. He's a guy that could probably start on another team, and you know, I wish him good luck. I think he's a good ball player. There's just nothing. It's similar to it's worse than Tyler Wade's situation, because Tyler Wade is forcing himself into the conversation, but there's just nowhere for him to play. So and we're going to see this, you know, when these guys come up and we're looking for when the Rule 5 happens and you can't protect all of these guys, we're going to start seeing more and more trades. And don't be surprised if Brian Cashman does it early so that he's not forced to say at that time when that occurs, when the Rule 5 happens and he can't protect these players and then he's stuck without any leverage. I mean, Brian Cashman's smarter than that. He's going to do a lot of these things ahead of time.
It's a product of having an unbelievable system.
It is.
This is first world problems.
Yeah.
To have to deal with this where you have so much talent, so much depth in your organization that you're going to have to trade guys who maybe you ordinarily wouldn't want to trade. Like, 5 years ago, Jake Cave doesn't get traded. He gets a shot at the major.
He's our number
leagues.
One prospect 5 years ago. John Heyman wrote an article this past week at FanRag talking about, I guess he had taken poll or just talked to a bunch of scouts in major leagues about the Yankees farm system and talking about the farm systems in general. And everybody is just like, it's loaded from top to bottom. They have a ridiculous amount of options, even after they've made these trades. This team is so deep in the minor leagues at this point, even after what they did in 2016 and then forward, because there have been trades since then. And there are still guys like Floreal is a stud waiting to happen. Mm-hmm. Like, that guy is probably going to be top. I don't know, where is he now in the prospect list in baseball?
Like MLB 10? MLB hunt, like top 100.
Yeah,
pipeline.
Yeah, I don't remember where he is. He's up there. He's a top 25. He's up there.
I'm looking it up right now.
I wouldn't be surprised after the year that he's a top 10, top five guy. Like, he's that good. He's a specimen. And when you listen to the post-game interviews, like, this guy gets it. Even when Gardner was talking about him, he gets it. And he's just one of those guys that is very exciting. Very exciting. But there's a lot more. There's a ton of arms down in the minor league system right now.
He's currently 44th overall.
44th. Look for him to jump way the hell
up. Brett Gardner was talking about him, I was actually very excited. Gardner spoke about how he speaks really good English for someone who's not
American. Is he from Haiti or Dominican? He's from one of those.
Yeah, I think he's from Haiti.
Yeah.
Because I remember there was a bunch of Yankee fans bashing Trump when he called Haiti a shithole country or whatever.
I don't know. Anyway. He speaks great English. Like, I have a lot of
CC.
I have a lot of admiration for these guys that don't grow up here and can speak English. I suck at Spanish. I took like 8 years of it in school, and I could say like five words. Like, it's completely impressive, and it's awesome that they know how to speak English. Like, I think it's
CC and Gardner talked about how that went a long way with them as respecting Florial as not just a baseball player, but as a person. If you take the time to learn something so you can communicate better to your teammates and communicate better to the media, that shows you are serious. You're a smart player. You're dedicated. And so them sort of talking about Florial's dedication, I think he watched Gardner in the cage for a long time or something like that too. That kind of stuff gets you... Like, the talent is one thing, but this sort of extra stuff gets you excited.
Yeah, it reminds me of a couple of things when you're talking about like the guys who go out and like do that extra thing. One, not a Yankee, but Carlos Correa was I don't know if you remember the story, but when he was a kid, like 10 years old or something like that, he told his dad that he wanted to learn English so that he could talk to the media and the reporters in the U.S. when he played baseball. Like, I love that. That was such a great storyline.
That was a big storyline during the ALCS, I remember.
And then last year, was it last year or 2 years ago? Maybe it was last January during that the winter warm up that the Yankees did in New York. It was in January. I was up at the event, and Gleyber Torres was on one of the panels, and he had. He had a translator there and like talking for him. And at one point he's just like, you know what? Took the mic and just started speaking English. He's like, I'm just going to do it. You know, he was embarrassed, I think, because his English is broken. But a lot of these guys, like, it doesn't matter. Like, nobody cares if your English is broken.
Why do you think like Gary Sanchez uses a translator? Do you think it's because he's embarrassed? Do you think he's embarrassed by his English, or do you think he doesn't want to say the wrong thing, get trapped in something he doesn't mean to say, or do you think it's just like
I think he's a soft-spoken guy, comfort factor? Yeah, I think he's a soft-spoken guy and doesn't really like that's his. He just doesn't care that much. Like,
do you think it limits him a little bit?
Ichiro can speak English perfectly fine, right, and still uses a translator.
Do you think it limits a guy like Gary Sanchez as being taking his popularity to the next level if he doesn't speak English to the media? Like, Yankee fans don't get to see and hear.
I don't really think it's a big factor. Maybe a little bit on the marketing side, but like,
well, because like Carlos Correa was talking,
his personality is more of a reserved guy, and you know, it's not like that's more his personality to me.
But Carlos Correa was talking about, like, I want to speak English to the media. I want to be able to be in front of.
I just think it's impressive for a 10-year-old kid to be like, I'm going to be a pro. I need to learn English.
And that story's probably bullshit anyway.
I guarantee he did that. I mean, I probably said that too, but it just didn't come true.
This is a nice segue into the Astros in general and just how cocky they are going into this season. They think they're untouchable. They think they're going to repeat no problem. And that's fine. They've got a stacked team, they're young. And they just traded for Garrett Cole, that he makes their rotation that much better. They got a full season of Verlander. Like, no one's denying the fact that the Astros are going to be a dirty team. You just don't like the fact that they're talking about it.
So I was listening to MLB radio today. It was they were doing a whole thing on spring trainings, and they were with the Astros. And it was, Steve, the former GM of the Mets. Anyway, I forget his last name. They were talking to him, and... to Alex Bregman. And Alex Bregman, the cockiest son of a bitch you will ever hear talk about a baseball team, talking about getting their ring sized and how he's going to get other fingers sized and do like a Tom Brady picture with the five rings. Like, already talking about repeating, already talking about doing three, like in a cocky tone. It was making me mad. Like, I started yelling at the radio. And I really didn't have any reason
old man
to like
yells at radio.
Yeah, I didn't, I had no problems. Like that team was like, they're good. Like I like kind of like Correa. Like Altuve, I got no problems with. Springer's kind of a cocky ass, but he's from Connecticut, so he's like a tri-state thing. Susan Waldman loves him, Pride of Connecticut. But you know what? When Alex Bregman comes around talking about the fact that they're going to win 3 and 5 championships,
not
with
one,
the amount of talent,
not two, not three.
Yeah, so I am. He's officially on my shit list. Like he's on my hate list now.
Good.
And I'm building up. Like I need that fire for these guys because they are going to be there. And the fact that they're getting overly confident, I love that. And you know what the Yankees are going to do? They're going to walk in, they're not going to say a damn word, and they're going to whoop your ass. And these guys are going to be confident, cocky, acting like their shit don't stink. Like they're going in assuming they're going to win.
Yeah. No, good. Hatred is good. Steve Phillips is the guy you're talking
about, by the way.
Steve
Phillips, thank
you. But no. This hatred is a good thing because we've talked about this with the Red Sox. There were a couple years there where the Yankee Red Sox rivalry was next to dead. Yeah. There's no passion. There's no hatred. You need something to hate in order for the rivalry to be in that next level. If it's the Astros this year, if the Yankees and the Astros are going neck to neck all season, good. Give me something to hate. That's what I love. That's the best thing about sports is rooting so hard for your team that you hate the other guys.
It's once the emotions start kicking in. When the emotions start kicking in, you become a lunatic. And you are losing yourself on the wins and the losses. That's when it becomes beautiful.
Yeah, and let them go pay Altuve $30 million a year because that probably means they can't re-sign Carlos Correa or Alex Bregman or Dallas Keuchel or somebody else.
Dallas Keuchel's another one I really hate. I hate Dallas Keuchel.
We always hated him.
But yeah, so anyway, he fueled the fire. Like they're really cocky, really, really, really cocky. Lance McCullers is cocky as hell. So there's a bunch of guys on that team that are very hateable, very hateable.
Before we get out of here, we have a t-shirt winner to announce. And actually before we do that, you still need to get in touch with the other.
We had two winners. I have to respond back to one of them. So yeah, I got you. I will respond to you either tonight or in the morning. So don't worry, I'm getting you your shirt.
The winner of this week's t-shirt is, the review is titled Don't Move to Idaho, and it's by Crazy Skier 777. He says, this podcast makes living in Idaho bearable for an hour a week, which is one more hour than it would be because it's Idaho. So, poor guy living out in Idaho. At least he gets some Yankees baseball, some Yankees talk.
A little potatoes, some baseball.
Yeah, Crazy Skier, hit us up on Twitter. We'll get you a t-shirt. Thanks for the review. Thanks to everybody who's been rating and reviewing the podcast. I know we're over 500 written reviews. Are we close to 900 actual ratings at this point? So it's awesome to see. Scott says it every week. I say it every week, but it helps us out immensely. It's the number one thing that you guys can do other than actually listening to the podcast is giving us a rating and review because it's what bumps us up in the iTunes rankings and things like that. We are going to hold off on mailbags. We are going to be in Tampa next week, so I think it's a good opportunity for us to answer a ton of mailbag questions next week. Thank you to everybody who submitted them. If you want to do so, it's bronxpinstripes.com/podcast. You can also tweet us at Yankees Podcast and at Bronx Pinstripes. So again, we're going to do a bunch next week. Final topic before we get out of here, we teased it last week, is the movie review episode. We got a ton of good suggestions. Field of Dreams was suggested. I wanted to do Field of Dreams. Scott was not into it. But the winner.
Whoa. Don't say I'm not into it. It's fine. We'll do it at some point. We should do a Yankee thing. The first one.
So we're going to do the 30 for 30 that was made about the Alex Rodriguez untrade to Boston.
Yeah.
That's going to be interesting. I've seen it once. I know it was like a short thing. It was only like a 20 or 30 minute thing.
30 for 30. I bet it's 30 minutes. Just going out on a limb here.
But. No, the 30 for 30s have been like 3 hours long before, so you can't go for that. But it's interesting. I remember it being very good, so I'm looking forward to watching it again, and that will be on an upcoming episode. Good stuff. We'll talk to you guys next week. Which means I dare y'all to muzzle
what my tongue do. My crew is painting pictures till they love you. Take a- All right, guys, before we get to the conversation with Aaron Judge's hitting coach, Richard Skank, I want to tell you a little bit about Audible. Audiobooks are great for helping you become a better you. Whether you want to feel healthier, more motivated, learn something new, you can try books like The 4-Hour Workweek to get your week planned out and ready to go. Or you could go Yankees topics and listen to some great books like Pinstripe Empire, Joe Torre's The Yankee Years, or even The Bronx Zoo, which is actually narrated by Sparky Lyle. It's a great opportunity for you to go in and find more books, and it also lets you switch seamlessly between devices so you can pick up where you left off, whether you're on your phone, on a tablet, you're on your computer, or Amazon Echo. Audible members get a free credit every month, and that's good towards any audiobook in the store, regardless of the price, and any of the unused credits actually roll over to the next month. I personally use it all the time. I don't have as much time to read as I used to, so I do listen to a lot of the Audible books. It's actually really good on the road. It's beautiful for car rides. Plus, your books are yours to keep, even if you cancel your membership. By listening to the show and being listeners of the Bronx Pinstripe Show, you can start a free 30-day trial. Get your first audiobook for free by going to audible.com/Bronx. Or you can text Bronx to 500-500. You can do this all with audiobooks. Again, start your 30-day free trial. Get your first audiobook for free. Go to audible.com/Bronx or text the code Bronx to 500-500. All right, guys, I'm happy to bring on Mr. Richard Skenk. He is the hitting coach for our guy, Aaron Judge. His website is hittingillustrated.com, and you can find him on Twitter at TeacherMan1986. Richard, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
So I want to kind of take a step back and talk about how, one, you got involved with being a hitting coach. I know you have a history of playing baseball, and you've coached your kids as well, but how did you become, you know, this guy that became obsessed with the mechanics of a swing?
I grew up in a small town in Iowa. My father was a big baseball fan. We had what they called town teams, and my dad as an adult would play, and I would be the bat boy, and I just, you know, that's how I got hooked on baseball. Went on and played through high school and college, and was a catcher, a good defensive catcher, not a great hitter. After my college days, I played a lot of fast pitch softball and continued to try to learn to hit, and I continued to fail. Eventually gave it up as I started a business, and that business took so much time I didn't have the time to play softball, but I still had this big interest and would always watch hitters on TV, SportsCenter, Baseball Tonight, etc., trying to figure out what they did. It's like I'm obsessed with it, although I have given up personally. Had a couple sons that started approaching high school, and they needed help with their hitting, and the internet was new, and I started researching on the internet everything and anything I could find to help them. That's probably started in roughly 1998, and around 2004, 5-6 years later, I don't remember the exact date, I just kind of decided that I don't think anybody knows what really happens, because we had tried everything everybody taught us to do. We tried real hard. We worked often. We didn't get better. And so I went to my basement with a bat, a ball, a tee, and a camera. And I just wanted to duplicate Barry Bonds' swing. My theory was, if I could duplicate his swing, I would feel what he's feeling. It was a theory. I wasn't certain of it, but that was what I started to do. So, I mean, I took, if not thousands, hundreds of swings, recorded them. I would put myself next to Barry Bonds on a laptop and play it back and forth and find out how bad I was, actually. I would say, you know, eventually I was doing, what's his lead arm doing? What's his rear arm doing? What's his lead hand doing? What's his rear hand doing? What's his lead leg doing? What's his body doing? What's his head doing? And I was, my goal was to match. And after, I don't know, two and a half years, I don't remember, I started paying attention to the rearward speed of Barry's barrel. At first, I thought he was just real fast at flattening the barrel and the back and then swinging it forward. Mm-hmm. My entire career, I swung forward. I thought that's what everybody did. The ball's out there in front. You apply force forward to hit the ball as best you can. So one Friday night in 2006, September of 2006, I'm watching Barry Bonds play the Cardinals, and I start paying more attention to this barrel speed behind him. And I started to think, he's not really just flattening it and swinging it forward. He's actually swinging it rearward, and it comes around in an arc forward, like a fan blade, if you will. Mm-hmm. And we have this thing in our basement called a personal pitcher. It's a little black plastic box with a couple electronic motors that spit out golf wiffle balls. And I went down to the basement that night and started messing around with creating this arc, this rearward arc behind me. And all of a sudden, I started squaring up every ball. Now, the previous time I had been in the basement, I really struggled. I'm 50 years old at the time, by the way. And the machine was too close to me, and I struggled hitting the ball. But on this particular night, after I started developing this rearward arc, I started squaring up every ball. And I thought, we've been at this for almost 8 years now. I think I finally found it. So that's where it started. That's where it ended, I guess, or maybe that's where it began, depending on how you're looking at it. My son, who was an eighth grader when I started this process, was a sophomore in college now, playing Division III baseball. I called him up on a Saturday morning, and I said, I'm coming over Tuesday to pitch batting practice to you. I did that, and he had a great batting practice session. Again, that was the fall of 06. He came home May of 07, home for summer, and he had never, ever in his life hit a ball over a fence. May 10th, he got home. We started working at this. May 24th, in a doubleheader, he hit 3 home runs, 2 doubles, and a triple, and they couldn't get him out. And we thought, wow, we have arrived. We have found what we're looking for.
That's
kind of where I came from and how it happened.
No, I love the story. I love the fact that, you know, it's beautiful. It starts in a basement. It starts after just, you know, peppering and trying to find that golden nugget. And when you're looking at Barry Bonds' swing, it is really interesting when you see how flat his bat gets behind him and how long it is in the zone as a plane. And, you know, he can connect with so many different balls, where I think a lot of the old teaching, right, is more people are coming down on the ball.
Yes.
Whereas he's staying back and almost flat through. It's fascinating to hear. So when you find this approach and you apply it to your son, that's obviously the light bulb went off and you're like, this is something that can be applied. How quickly did your son take onto it? I mean, it's got to be a very different feeling than what he was used to. And I'm sure you see that for most of your clients.
Very different. And, that doubleheader he did well. That summer he hit 7 home runs, I think, and he would have had 10 or 12 if all the fields had fences. Some of our fields were wide open in the outfield, and they'd run the ball down. He had a great summer. And along my way, along my internet research, I had met several dads across the country that were just like me, just trying to help their sons get better. And when I reported my progress to them, they were real curious, and they encouraged me to start a website, which I did. And I had 6 original members, I think, of which 2 of them, their sons are now playing professionally. They got college scholarships, Division I scholarships, and now they're playing professionally. But the real breakthrough came when David Matranga, who is now Aaron Judge's agent, mm-hmm. he was a player himself, had a long minor league career, and he and I had met on the internet, and we started working together. I was trying to teach him what I learned, and he had a nice year this last couple of years, but he was already in his 30s, and it was too late for him. So one thing led to another. He retires from baseball, goes to work for his agent, which is PSI Sports in Ventura, California, owned by Paige Odell. And David, from 2009, I think, when he retired, until 2016, David and I are just friends. We don't talk much, but we'll talk baseball now and then. He'll send me a video of one of their clients and ask me what I think, and he'd send me videos of the client or the players he's trying to recruit to their agency and ask me what I think. So I was just kind of like a friendly consultant.
Sure.
In 2016, he invited me to work with Aaron Judge. And that's when things have blown up. That's when things got big.
Yeah, I can imagine once this came out and you fixed this. I mean, you're talking about after Judge had his 2016 season, when he came up at the end and was striking out at it was close to a 50% clip. And then what he did specifically coming out of the gate in 2017, I mean, obviously there were changes. You could see that there were changes in the way he approached the ball and approached the plate. And just, it seemed like he wasn't thinking as much. It seemed like he had a plan there, and everything was coming a lot more naturally. You know, it's funny because you see a lot of managers in the major leagues. A lot of them are like guys that were backup catchers in the major leagues. And you talk about yourself being a catcher and not even a great hitter when you were playing. Do you think that contributes to the fact that you became so obsessed of learning the mechanics? Chances are, if you were a good hitter, maybe you would have taken things for granted.
You're right. If I was a good hitter, I would have never gone through what I went through. Right. I would have reached my college, you know, ceiling playing level, and I would have given it up.
So as a Yankee fan, we're very appreciative that you weren't a great hitter. So thank you. Thank you very much.
Yeah, for all the frustration I had for 2.5 years, you're welcome.
that's great. And it's really interesting when you hear about the type of guys that have success. I think you see that in a lot of sports, actually. You see even basketball coaches or guys that a lot of them were not great players, but really had to study and work their butts off and grind to get to where they were study the back end of things. So
an old saying, those that can't do, teach.
That's right. So you were introduced by David Mutrenga to Aaron Judge. He obviously struggled after he came up in 2016. Was it well received, this type of thing? I can imagine it being so different because he's such a big bodied guy. You know, I can't imagine you worked with a guy that big. And you know, what kind of differences are there?
Well, one thing that's real interesting is I had never heard Aaron Judge's name before.
Really?
Before I got invited to work with him. I'm not a Yankee fan. I'm not a Yankee fan, but I don't live there.
Sure.
I'm in St. Louis. I'm a big Cardinal fan. National League, I don't hear Aaron Judge's name. So David asked me to come out and work with Aaron Judge. He tells me who he is, but so I get there, and yeah, he's a mammoth. He's huge. but I don't teach anything different to a big guy that I teach to a little guy. You may or may not know the name Scott Kingery, who is also represented by PSI. When I worked with Aaron in January of 17, I was also working with Scott Kingery. Aaron is 6'7", 280. Scott Kingery is 5'10", 180. And at the All-Star break last year, Aaron was leading the major leagues in home runs, and Scott was leading the minor leagues in home runs. So what I teach has nothing to do with the size of the body. Surely Aaron's going to hit them farther and more of them than Scott. But what I do is I maximize your ability to apply force into the baseball. And so your God-given gifts of your athleticism, your strength, your size is something I don't have anything to do with, but I can help you drive the baseball. So I didn't teach Aaron anything different than I teach anybody else.
When I read Mike Mazzio's article about your relationship and how you changed his Aaron Judge's swing from the Daily News, and one of the things that I thought was awesome was when you first met him, you talked about the first drill that you did and putting a ball on a tee, and you both in unison would swing, and every single time you would get your barrel to the ball before Aaron Judge would, and
yeah,
that's fascinating to me, and I love it.
I call it the command drill.
Yep.
And the command drill represents the moment you decide to swing when a ball's coming at you from a pitcher.
Mm-hmm.
So what I do is Aaron has a ball on a tee, and I have a ball on a tee, and we have a third person who's going to give the command to swing. So we both get ready. The guy says swing, and we both swing as soon as we hear that. And I would hit the ball every time before Aaron did. I'm 62 years old and not in particularly great shape. And he's a physical specimen in the best shape of his life.
Yep.
And I could get my barrel to the ball before he could. And it deals with the technique that I teach. He would look at me and say, "What are you doing, old man?"
That'll definitely get someone's attention immediately. That's great.
Yeah. And basically that's what I teach is swing quick, launch quickness. You hear a lot of people talk about exit velocity and launch angle, and those things are great. I've never heard anybody except myself talk about launch quickness, the ability to get the barrel up to speed instantly from the time you decide to swing.
And that was something that I read as well when I was looking into your methods. Is it seems like because you can teach this, and because once a guy masters the approach that you take, they have a longer time really to make the adjustments to the ball, right? Because they're not trying to load up.
Yes.
It's already loaded.
That's right. That's right. When what Aaron was doing on the, in this drill, after the command, he would load and swing. Mm-hmm. I already had the load out of the way. All I had to do was swing. And so Aaron now knows how to get the load out of the way before the decision to swing so that he's quicker. He's way quicker,
yeah.
Which gives you another 2 or 3 foot long of ball travel to decide whether to swing or read the spin or, you know, you're just going to make a better decision.
And one thing, it was definitely noticeable when you're watching him first half of 17 compared to what he was doing in 16, is it seems like his lower body was a lot more quiet. It seems like there wasn't as much movement, and I guess that's going into the fact that he's quicker to the ball. He's not doing as much with his bottom half, right? It's just kind of going along with his with the swing.
Well, I would say it like this. By the way, that's a great observation. In 2016, Aaron, and in fact most major leaguers, was using momentum of their body's movement to get their barrel up to speed.
Mm-hmm.
But in 2017, he's using a stretching process that really doesn't show much movement as it's happening.
Right.
And the best example I could give you, have you ever flicked somebody's ear with your forefinger?
Of course.
You load it with your thumb, and it flicks out of the load of the thumb, right?
Mm-hmm.
Aaron loads his leg. I should say what I teach is Aaron loads his leg with his hip, with coiling of his hip. And that coiling hip movement is not very – he presets it, okay? And so his leg is ready to snap like the finger snaps out of the hold of the thumb.
Mm-hmm.
The leg snaps out of the hold of the hip. And so there's a sudden burst of the body that comes out of what appears to be no movement at all, or very little movement,
right,
as compared to what you saw in 2016, where he's really getting a lot of movement and a lot of momentum. Momentum is what pitchers exploit. They will get you momentuming or starting early for that fastball,
sure,
and then that momentum gets you lunging for the off-speed pitch. But when you can stand there with a loaded forefinger and thumb feeling, and then at the right moment just let it snap, they can't exploit you as much. Now, that pitching's pretty good at that level, so
yeah, right.
they get you, okay? But at least you have a tool that will work if you can maintain your mechanic.
Yeah, if you're reverse engineering these things, it's something I like to do. I get when I'm looking at pitching mechanics and swing mechanics and things like that too. I mean, it sounds like it's like a spring almost, where you're building up that resistance and that,
yes,
tension. And then I did notice one thing when Aaron thanked you on Twitter, he used the hashtag at the end of it, snap it. I got to assume that's what that,
yep,
is referring to.
Yes. I work with Aaron's agents, clients,
mm-hmm,
and for the most part, they all call me the snap man, because I keep telling them, snap it, whether you're snapping your hands to get the barrel to go rearward or whether you're getting the snap out of your leg, there's a sudden burst, a sudden snap when you do what I teach properly. And that's pretty much what sets me apart from all the other hitting instructors out there.
Yeah, no, I love it. One thing that I also, when I was watching, it was a Yes Network feature, I believe, of Aaron Judge talking about his swing in the cage. One thing that he noticed, one thing that he mentioned that was just fascinating to me, and I don't know if this is something that you do when you're looking back and you're working with guys, you know, whose tape are you looking at, pros tape? Because he was talking about going all the way back and looking at Babe Ruth's swing and how,
yeah,
long his bat was in the zone and how much contact,
yes,
he would make. Is that something that you do on the regular basis?
Yes. When I had my aha moment from studying Bonds, I started looking at all the hitters.
Mm-hmm.
And even though Bonds is the greatest of all time in terms of the efficiency of his swing, I don't care if it's Albert Pujols or Adrian Gonzalez or Manny Ramirez or Ted Williams or Joe DiMaggio or Mickey Mantle. You go back, you're going to see what Bonds did in all of them. They may stand different. They may hold their bat different. They may be wide in their stance. They may be narrow. They may be upright. They may be crouched over. But at the moment of launch, you'll see what Barry Bonds did in every one of those guys. So I didn't invent anything new. I just have learned how to teach it.
That's great. A couple of things about Judge I'd like to ask in more general. I could talk with you for hours about hitting, honestly, because it's fascinating to me. And I know you've watched and taught so many people that the wealth of knowledge is amazing. When you're looking at Judge, and I mean, he had some struggles in the middle of the year last year. Do you talk to him in the middle of the year? Or is this something where you're like in the off season working on that stuff, and then maybe getting into in the middle of the season, it's too much information? Is that ever a problem?
Aaron's mid-season slump. I'm not going to go into the reasons why. You can talk to Aaron about that.
Sure.
But we talked a lot during that time, and we were able to work him out of it. He had a pretty good September. In fact, September was his best month. So, you know, the pitching at that level is good. But I'll say this. After the All-Star break and before September, Aaron fell into the 2016 swing.
Mm-hmm.
And we got him back to the 2017 swing in September.
I'm glad you said that. One thing that we noticed when he was playing, and like I like to dissect these things too, is you could absolutely tell that his stance was more open. It looked like his front side was coming out a little early, whereas in the first half of the year 17, and then back into the end of the season too, you could see he was a little bit more closed and it was a lot more quiet in the lower half. And it seemed like once he did that, he wasn't as long and wasn't falling for that outside pitch. And it was pretty amazing how in season he was able to make that adjustment.
When one of my hitters is right, they can feel something before it happens.
Yeah.
They can feel the load. They can feel the stretch. They know they're right. They know they just need a pitch to hit. And if they get it, they're going to get the barrel on it. And hitters, for whatever reason, I don't have this reason. I wish I did. I'd stop it. At times, they can't get that feeling.
Sure.
Whether, you know what I mean? It's just, yeah. I guess if they were perfect all the time, they'd hit 500 instead of 300,
right.
You know. But he went through a period of time where he just couldn't find the feeling. So.
Are there next steps for a guy like Judge and his swing, or is it more of the same and just kind of making sure that the muscle memory stays where it is? And like you said, continuing that feel, are there any next steps for his swing?
I don't think so, other than just getting it automatic where you don't have to think so much. The more reps you do, the more automatic it becomes, and now you can just see the ball and launch it. But when you're playing at the level these guys play at, and that pitching is so good, and you have to think about your mechanics and react to the ball, that's a tough job.
Yeah.
When you get the swing automatic and all you can have to do is react, then you've got a real chance to be a great hitter.
Well, Richard, thanks so much for coming on and talking with us about this. It's fascinating to me. You can find Richard at TeacherMan1986 on Twitter. His website is hittingillustrated.com. I got to believe that your client base has blown up since this as well, because it seems like that, you know, everybody is going to, I assume, is going to want in on what you, the changes that you made with Aaron. So thanks very much for coming on and taking time.
Thanks for having me. Enjoyed it.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.